Welcome to the Valley Outdoors. Glad to have you guys with us this week. I've got a lot of fun stories, I think, this week. We got Ava in the house as well.
How's it going?
Don will be here shortly. I don't know where he's wandering.
He's gallivanting, but he's here.
He got lost, exactly. And me, Eric. So we are all here. We are going to be contributing to an absolutely phenomenal show. You guys need to hang out for it. And so that's what makes Valley Outdoors interesting. Us. And you guys, thanks for hanging out. We'll be right back with more Valley Outdoors. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Welcome, Ava. Don, how's things?
We're all here.
Here, yeah.
Ava, big buck killer.
Yeah, thanks.
The family did well.
We did, yes.
Big time.
Yeah, you know, this is the second season hunting that land. Last year, didn't get one. And then now, all three of us got one. On opening...
Triple header.
Morning.
Well, my husband was Monday.
Okay.
And then I
got... Your dad got one in the morning.
I got one in the evening, Saturday. And then he got his on Monday. And his was a monster, so worth the wait. Haven't scored it yet. Mine was only a 95.
Oh. did they score your dad's?
He will. See, they got to get the head back.
Yep.
And that's what we're waiting for. So I'll fill you in next week.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm still waiting on mine.
Didn't pull it?
Didn't pull that trigger? I didn't pull the trigger. I had three of them in my sights, but I just decided to hold off.
That's all right. You got time.
Oh, yeah.
I opted to go fishing.
One. All right. Well, that doesn't surprise me. When was the last time you went hunting?
Oh, pheasant hunting?
No, I mean deer hunting.
Oh, you've been archery about a year ago.
Archery?
Yeah.
Have you done gun opener? Oh,
many, many, many years. Did it with my dad. We go up to Spider Lake, Grand Rapids.
Okay.
We go up there, go hunting a lot. But then we went out west, and that... I don't know. Have you guys hunted out west before?
No.
Elk? Yeah.
Yes.
Did you get a tag one?
No, I did not.
It's the most bizarre thing, I have to say. If anybody that's hunted out west kind of understands, in Minnesota perspective, you've got trees, you've got distances, you can kind of get a handle on range, right?
Yep.
You go out to Montana or Wyoming, big sky. Well, the big sky makes a big difference. So my dad, he and I were out hunting with a couple other guys who were out in the field and having a lunch break. And we were guessing distances. I had a rangefinder I brought with. And he says, don't pull the rangefinder out. I want you to throw a rock. Do you think you can hit that rock outcropping over here? Yeah, no problem. Grab the rock. I throw it, and I throw pretty far.
Yeah, maybe halfway.
Maybe halfway.
Yeah.
So it's perspective on distance.
Yeah, it's very
absolutely
deceiving.
Blew me away.
Yeah.
You're thinking something that's a couple hundred yards. It's like 475, and you got to be kidding me. You know, so you're having to calculate some calculations. But we were talking about it before we started today, and how many people you hear? Oh, I shot at a running deer at 400 yards. I'm like, why?
Yeah, why?
Why are you doing that? That's just, I don't care how good you are.
Well, your odds of success are so low, and your odds of, even if you wound them, your odds of getting a good shot is pretty nil.
It is, and that's one of those things where, okay, now you're going to stress everybody in the hunt group because you decided to take a shot that was not good just to try and get one, especially a mule deer. I don't know if you ever watched a mule deer run.
Oh, yeah, they hop.
Yep. It's a Peter Rabbit program.
Yep.
And that's the sad part about it. But invariably, you will have that scenario comes up and you can't get a shot or something happens. Maybe the bullet hits a twig or deflects or your scope was off.
My scope was off, yes, so I didn't.
And it doesn't take much.
No.
If you bump it or,
yeah,
you know, somehow it gets knocked out of in, you know, being sighted in, it can be a major issue. So, but one of the things I thought was kind of funny, us going through different articles, and I thought, you know what? We had enough stories about people that were having to track deer. 4 tips for tracking wounded deer.
Okay. I
thought it was a good thing. And it doesn't matter whether you're a bow hunter or a rifle hunter or a slug hunter, you're going to have that scenario that comes up. And maybe it's a pass-through shot, which happens where you get it in the lungs. It just doesn't take much to be off a little bit. So obviously that is a disappointment to say the least. So number one, watch your shot. This happened a lot in pheasant hunting. We had people at the lodge. They'd shoot and they wouldn't watch where the bird went down, and they'd just start going on the next bird. It's like, wait a minute, you need to figure out where that bird was. In this case, watch where the shot was, keep track of the shot, where it hit the animal. That's important as well. A lot of people are, I don't know where it hit it, or I know I hit it, and you come to find out it grazed it or didn't hit it at all. So it's important in the tracking, because if you shot really badly, completely missed the mark, the deer could go a long way, and that's a big issue too, chasing it. If you hit a vital area, you're likely not to have it travel too far. Your deer, right, Ava?
Yep.
And plenty of deer will drop quickly, if not on the spot.
I actually got a story about that. Back in the 70s when I was hunting, we shot a deer, and we caught up with it 4 miles later. And we're very fortunate to find it, and it was still alive.
I think a tough part about that too is that the adrenaline in the meat, it makes it taste a little funky when it's that hard.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
No, waiting game. This is an important one, and it follows into the we were talking about, Don. When you shoot a deer and it takes off, the first thing a lot of times you want to do is, hey, get the guys together. We got to go after it. But that is the last thing. A pushed deer can travel much farther because adrenaline gets after it. Most other times it'll lay down, bed down, and hang
expire,
out and expire right there. Wait 30 minutes at least before you start going after it.
Yeah, it took Dustin's a long time.
To find it?
Yeah. Well, no for it to pass.
Yep.
He said a prayer for it, you know, because he had to stand there. And,
yeah.
But thankfully it did not get back up, but he gave it plenty of room and time. So
again, blood trail. Finding a blood trail, extremely important, even when the shot of vital organs can take a while to start bleeding heavily. So understand that. And if you find those small drops of blood, stay on the trail. You're likely to encounter more blood. You can also get clues to the animal type of blood you're seeing. Greenish blood is likely a stomach hit. Pinkish blood, it will be a lung shot. Dark blood means liver. And if the blood is bright red, that means it was not hit in a vital organ. It's good to mark the areas where you find blood. It helps you determine where the deer has been and where it might be going. So mark it with a pink, like a ribbon or that material you could tie so you can come back and track it the next morning. So important pieces and parts, and understanding the wounded deer action as well, similar patterns, etc. Not 100% certainty, but understand that. All right, we're going to be back with more Valley Outdoors right after this. Welcome back, everybody, and we'd like to have you guys check us out on Facebook. And Don, where else?
On the web at www.thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Exactly. Lots of cool stuff there.
A lot of cool things, you know. I just had a friend the other day who wanted to know about, you know, where firearm training safety classes were being held, and it's. In our case, we clicked on Minnesota and went to the DNR and just searched for firearm safety, and all the locations in the state come up with perfect dates and when you can do it. So
totally interactive.
Yes.
That's
exceptional. It's there for the outdoorsman, for the hunter, any state in the country.
Which is cool. I like it. I like it a lot. One thing I don't or wouldn't like is... I'll be honest with you, Don. Florida is a great state. I think there's a lot of cool things there. It's temperate and it's nice and warm. It's all season. But there's a lot of stuff that are, it's pretty nasty down there.
Critters.
Yeah.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Golf course, you know, you don't go chase your golf ball when it's next to the water.
Now, you know, the very one of the first times I went down there, I was in a community called Bonita Springs, and I was on a course, and I was this course was kind of an exclusive course. I had actually won this trip, so it was kind of special. And I was golfing. I golfed the first round with my wife, and I couldn't buy enough balls to get around in, so... You know, there's a lot of water in Florida. So the next
water trap.
So the next morning, they hooked me up with a retired general or something from the military that had a home on the place. And, of course, the golf course is absolutely gorgeous with all the flowers, right? So I hit a ball into a bush, and I'm over there pawing through it looking for it. And the old general goes, whoa, you don't want to be doing that. He goes, use your club. That snake won't hurt your club. I go, oh, I never give it a thought. We don't deal with a lot of that up here with snakes in the bushes.
I had that. We golfed in Vegas. And one of the sections of the course was rather an arid, rocky kind of thing. And I shanked one. And I was going to wander over. And the guy I'm golfing with, he lived out there. And he said, no. You do not wander off the course to go get him. Period. That ball's gone. Do not. I said, really? He goes, there's not just one rattlesnake out there. There'll be two or three. And she gone. Kiss her goodbye. So, not good. So, the story.
I'd be okay with that. I mean, the other thing is, too, when I was in Vegas, here, you go out to the Red Rock, there's tarantulas walking around out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of other
different things in different areas.
So the point I have really here is the story I just pulled up is an alligator was found hiding underneath an unaware Florida resident's car.
Yeah, that.
All we have to worry about is frost in the morning, or maybe slippery snow or ice.
Right.
This thing is no. According to authorities in Florida, a large gator was found lurking underneath a car in the middle of the night. Unfortunately, the animal was spotted before it could give the vehicle's owner an unwelcome surprise. They posted a picture of the alligator to its Facebook page, and the image is it was a 6-foot gator. Could barely be seen underneath the vehicle. Fortunately, officers had witnessed the gator crossing a nearby street before making its way to the parking lot of an apartment complex. They were able to spot the car that eventually it slid under. Good news for the car owner. And apparently, it was headed towards the car very shortly prior to the hookup with the police, and they found that it was there. Well, they were unaware of the reptile's presence at the time, so it's a good thing that they found that particular animal. Based on the photos, they may not have noticed the predator hiding under the car until he was standing right next to it, is probably what would have happened. Deputies spotted the 6-foot gator crossing the street by these apartments before 3 a.m. It hid underneath the resident's vehicle before it came outside to retrieve something from his car. And the troopers responded and was able to collect the gator, relocate it to a more suitable environment.
Jeez. Wonderful.
Not good. I'm sorry. Can you imagine? You walk out there, and
do they ever have like roadkill in Florida? Like we have a deer around here.
No, if you hit a gator, it probably will total your car.
Oh, well, I just bump it, just go to the top of it, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah, that's what I mean though. You probably lose control of your vehicle, and crash. So, moving to a much more northern location, the drought. Is taking its toll on the North Dakota mule deer herd. Unfortunately, the Game and Fish Department Fall Deer Survey indicated that the drought had a major influence on the fawn production. Biologists had counted 2,163 mule deer in the aerial survey in October. The ratio of 60 fawns per 100 does was significantly lower than last year's 82 per 100, and the long-term average of 88 per 100, while 38 bucks per 100 does was similar to 2020 and 36 over 100 and the long-term average of 43 by 100. This year's count was the lowest fawn-to-doe ratio since 2012 and 11, following the severe winters of 2008 through 2010. They said the big game management supervisor from Dickinson had said the nutritional stress related to drought was also apparent, with considerably more yearling bucks observed as spikes rather than forked bucks. Snowfall and windy conditions during the survey limited biologists to 20 of the 24 survey areas, and the fall aerial survey conducted specifically to study demographics. It covers 24 study areas and 306 square miles of western North Dakota. They also survey the same study in the spring, and they want to determine the deer abundance at that point. What do you think about that?
Well, it's one of those cycles, I imagine, that happens. Like you say, it's how many years ago did they have a similar situation?
Yeah.
You know, 10 years. So hopefully it'll reverse itself with some moisture.
Yeah, we need to get it. Need to get it for sure. The next thing, I always find it funny. Have you ever had Canadian goose?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It can be good.
Oh, I have an excellent recipe for it. It's fairly simple.
Can be good. I thought this was a rather good one. So we want to kind of provide some random cooking tips. These are going to be recipes that we will have on.
We'll get them on the website, right? So that you can look them up. It might take us a week or two,
but it'll be
watching for it.
It will be there. This one is grilled Canada goose steak salad.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
This particular bird, a lot of times, if you don't cook it right, any wild game, if you overcook it, it gets dry and tough and not good. So goose breast consistently has replaced beef in many areas of recipes. You can replace it from steak, which is kind of neat. And you can treat them just like steak. Soak them in balsamic-based marinade for about 4 to 8 hours. Grill them in a smoking hot grill until they're perfectly medium rare. Medium rare is crucial.
Yep.
And after resting, the meat can be sliced thinly and served over fresh summer greens. It's a simple and delicious way to show versatility of that bird. And story goes, the particular author said that they have converted more than one goose meat hater with this particular approach. So look for the grilled Canada goose steak salad, and we have all of the recipe, full recipe, and the whole nine yards will be there. And it's got some good stuff like some feta in the salad. I'm a big feta fan. Cucumber and a lot of other pieces,
all
parts,
the greens.
And elements. Yep. So,
I mean, a quick recipe for Canadian goose. I mean, just use the old blue roaster like grandma had, right? And you take a goose breast, you just simply wrap it in bacon all the way around.
Everything's better with bacon, Don.
Well, it is. And then here's the amazing thing is you cover the whole thing with raisins. So that you fill it up, your roaster, with raisins, and then you cook it at 225 for about 5 hours, slow roast it. And when you open it up, well, the amazing thing is the raisins will be gone. They cook down, and that goose breast is amazing.
Awesome. Yep. I like it. Well, that's what we're going to have to get that. Now we have to get that one on.
Yeah, we'll put that one on, too.
Okay, sounds good. Well, tell you what, we're going to take a break, and we will be back. We're going to talk a little bit about something that's going on in Wisconsin involving pheasants and maybe some more to hunt for the Christmas season. So hang tight. That story coming right up. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Donald?
Yes?
So, as I teased before we went to break, that's what they call it, right?
Yes.
Okay. Both of us enjoy pheasants. Bava, you like pheasants too?
Sure.
Okay. I love to hunt them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yep. Wisconsin is doing something that I think we talked about it off air, I think is absolutely amazing, cool, don't you?
I do. This is a great idea.
Ava, your thoughts? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Now that we all said yes, nobody has any idea what we're talking about. Here's the way this works. The title of it goes, Pheasants and More of Them for Christmas. Out of Madison, Wisconsin, the Wisconsin DNR recently announced the department will stock pheasants at 25 state properties in central and southern Wisconsin during the week of December 20th to increase the hunting opportunities throughout the holiday season. The pheasant holiday stocking program began in 2017 to provide pheasant hunters with an additional opportunity to hunt during the holiday season. Five state properties were initially stocked in 2017, with another three added in 2018, obviously being one of the most sought-after game birds in North America and a significant interest within Wisconsin pheasant hunters. The DNR will stock. What did you want to know how many, Don?
Well, I was hoping that our listeners would want to know how many.
2,920 pheasants across 25 state properties over a two-day period during the week of December 20th.
So they can only hunt for 2 days?
Yep.
Okay.
Pheasant season in Wisconsin does run until January 9th. Excited to grow the holiday stocking to 25 properties this year and offer more opportunities to hunt with family and friends, said the DNR State Game Farm Manager. The selected areas are located near population centers to provide accessible opportunities to as many holiday hunters as possible, as well as areas that see high hunter use throughout the pheasant hunting season.
You know, something that's rather unique about that is they'll more than likely have the opportunity to hunt pheasants with snow on the ground, which is way fun because they're a lot easier to see.
Well, and they hold tight.
And they hold tight. So, yeah, it's good practice for your hunting dog.
Yeah, it is. The only thing you do need, you have to purchase a 2021, 2022, in this case 2021, Wisconsin pheasant stamp to pursue these birds with the stamp funded revenue that DNR creates and maintains grassland habitat. So I just think that's flat out cool.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea for an activity at that time of year.
It is. It really is neat. So we will also have that posted. The areas will be posted on a website.
Well, I'm guessing that it's going to be listed on the Wisconsin DNR, which
it will be.
It would already be there.
That's true. We do have the link up there. So if you go to our website,
right. Just go to Wisconsin.
Click on Wisconsin. And then go on to the Wisconsin DNR website. It should be right there. And,
yep, absolutely.
Kettle Moraine is one. Lake Mills.
Anything in the western side of the state?
Let me think. Waterloo, Yellowstone, Evansville, Foothville, French Creek.
Well, you can look. You can look online and see if there's anything that
interests
you.
Yeah, I can't tell. I don't speak fluent Wisconsin counties, so I couldn't tell you offhand, but. Definitely pretty cool. Definitely pretty cool. Story comes out of one of our favorite publications, Outdoor News,
right.
Mr. Rob Dreesline.
Yeah.
And big woodpeckers and renewed life for Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Treaty.
On late September, the administration finalized a rule that restores protections under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. The century-old MBTA is one of the nation's bedrock conservation laws that served the continent in 17 presidential administrations of both political parties just fine, despite opposition. They are changing it, and I was glad to see. In this particular article, Rob says that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife had decided to restore the changes of previous change, and they included a prohibition on incidental take of migratory bird species. National conservation groups like the Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership applauded the action. They talk about the pileated woodpeckers. General consensus is the pileated's ability to survive in many woodland habitats has allowed the species to cope with human habitation. You can just ask at my house, whether or not the woodpeckers are enjoying their resurgence.
Your house?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
They like mine, too.
Do you have the same kind of siding? And
probably not as Eric does.
Mine's rough cedar tongue and groove. Unfortunately, I don't think they've been able to figure out the downspouts versus the siding, because every once in a while you hear this clink, 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 clink.
Yeah.
So they're on the downspout?
Oh, yeah, they pounded on the downspout just because mm-hmm. they made a mistake. It's brown and kind of looks like the rest of it. So, yeah, so that's good news. It really is. It's an extended article. You can find it on Outdoor News, but I really think it's important on this one that they're really doing some things to help preserve and promote the save.
Birding.
The birding.
You know, sitting in the tree stand, the amount of blue jays in the woods was amazing.
And
I don't know what was
irritating.
Going on. But it was like, why? Like, why so many blue jays and robins? Blue jays and robins, like crazy.
You know, I didn't see any of those.
No?
I saw these little, I don't know what they were, but they were down in the leaves. And if you can't see below you, you're going, I mean, it sounds like something walking up on you, you know? They're jumping around in there.
Yeah, that's where you finally, shut up.
Yep.
You feel better. So, you know what? Let's jump into a story I've been meaning to get to, and if I can find it. It involves one of my favorite skiers, believe it or not. I had to bring it up this week, Don. Had to do it. Michaela Schifrin. See how I snuck that in on you?
In the final minute here.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, well, you better.
Olympic skier.
Because you got 30 seconds.
70th World Cup win. Amazing. She's back to her winning career. Less than 100 days before the Olympics and the Winter Olympics. And I'm super excited about that. She's on track to do it again. She's going for 5 disciplines this year. So congrats to that and the U.S. ski team.
You know what? Shaun White is returning to the Winter Olympics as well.
I did not hear that. The big red hair dude, the carrot. Very cool.
I mean, he's got to be up in his 40s.
Yeah, but awesome.
He can do it. It's cool. Thanks, guys. Here are the Valley Outdoors for Don, Ava, myself, Eric. We are out. Join us next week. We don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be great. See you. Bye.